Welcome to the Full of Trace and Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy. Recording is 2:30 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is October 17th. I thought we'd kick off with the Asia Dollar Index, and it got me to thinking today about index composition because back during the crash of 1997, the renminbi didn't represent 40% of the index. So today it does. So we are not really looking at the same performance, but it's certainly coming back into an interesting area where we've seen support come in 2001 and again around this level in 1998. So it's a rational time to start thinking about, well, just how much further is it going to go down? Well, obviously, a lot is going to hinge on what happens with the renminbi. Because not only is it the largest constituent, but then it's also a major trading partner and competitor for lots of the other currencies within the index, and the renminbi is still weak. Now, I think it's important to highlight the fact that China's debt growth has been exploding over the last decade. So when we look at it, credit to the government is trending higher. Credit to households is trending higher. Credit to non-financial corporations is trending higher, albeit perhaps not quite as quickly. And GDP might be rising, but not rising at nearly the same pace. Now, that wasn't quite true. In 2008, 10, or 12, we could see that these GDP bars were keeping up with growth, or excuse me, were keeping up with the growth in debt levels. But the problem with increasing the debt load is you're increasing your service burden as well, and eventually the low-hanging fruit, those types of investments that have the highest returns get obviously the low-hanging fruit are acquired quickly, and then with the demand for growth, you need more and more debt to generate each incremental unit of new growth, and this is exactly the issue that China is facing right now. It's an awfully big question following the big speech that Xi Jinping gave over the weekend. So his third term is likely to be confirmed by next week or next weekend. And then the big question is, what are they going to do with the next 5 years? So he made taking back Taiwan a central portion of the talk, and then achieving independence for the economy relative to their current condition as a central portion to support that view. So China needs to become independent in order to achieve its goal of reunification with Taiwan. Or perhaps it might be more accurate to say unification with Taiwan. Now, when we look at the CSI 300, well, it has steadied. And we had some steadier action in here today. It's likely that the Chinese government is going to want to ensure that the stock market goes up when Xi Jinping is confirmed for his third term, and we're starting to see some evidence of that now. There was an upside queue reversal in the middle of last week, and then upside follow through on Friday, and it was steadier again in here today. Then, of course, there's a continued focus on technology, and we have a clear weekly upside Q reversal here from the Chinex index, which is the smaller, more speculative portion of the market. And this is certainly some evidence of a higher reaction low. So we're certainly seeing some engineering underway to ensure that the stock market goes up. But that doesn't mean that we're going to have a very clear recovery. It's simply that we're getting short-term support coming in, and it is coming at the cost of devaluing the currency. Now, with that debt issue, I think one of the biggest challenges right now is that nobody really knows what's going to happen with Taiwan. I think that there are two important factors. The first is that debt issue in China, because it can't continue on this path indefinitely. That's what the whole aim of deliberately trying to contain leverage within the property sector was for. The weighting of investment in sustaining growth in China is higher by an order of magnitude relative to anywhere else in the world. So they have to continue to try to decrease that reliance on investment and support internal demand and less complete dependence on government largesse. And that means then that they still have tens of millions of empty apartments and an urbanization trend that's slowing down. So that's obviously a challenge that will take quite some time to overcome. But then you have the other side of this argument, which is Taiwan. Taiwan has just had probably its best terms of trade in its history in 2021. And the Taiwan dollar appreciated meaningfully between 2019 and 2021. And it has since given it all back. Now, the Taiwan dollar has been quite volatile over the course of the last 20 years, ranging between about 28 and 36, or I guess 35 to be more accurate. We had the big depreciation in 97 through to the second quarter of 1998, and then a big appreciation. So this is not quite as large, but certainly coming from a similar area. Relative to the US dollar. And there's no sign yet that it is over. So the Taiwan dollar is depreciating versus the US dollar, not least because the yen continues to depreciate, and there's no real sign yet that this trend is over either. But then there's also the fact that semiconductor prices are coming down rather quickly. So memory prices have certainly been coming down. The Philadelphia Semiconductors Index is still trending lower. Now, we've had some steadier action, and there's a deep short-term oversold condition, but now it's well below the 1,000-day moving average. It's completely unwound the jump upwards following the breakout in the middle of 2020. So we might see some steadier action in here in the short term. But I think it's very unlikely that we're going to see 4,000 anytime soon again, because we've got hundreds of billions that have been already committed to building new semiconductor factories around the world. Everybody now wants to be independent, and everybody now wants to have lots of manufacturing capacity. And once that manufacturing capacity is in place, then we're going to see the price of semiconductors collapse. And a number of those Taiwanese companies that have invested in new supply are going to be in trouble. So China wants to take over Taiwan. They have an accelerated timetable because of their own debt issues. They've also deliberately stoked nationalist fervor, and there's the potential that they're going to turn the Brexit issue into China's version of the Brexit issue. And a lot of the political gains from Brexit were harvested before the referendum, because you had many conservative MPs that basically base their careers on being Eurosceptic without really having to do anything about it. After the referendum, this is when all of the challenges have arrived. Now, it's no longer about rhetoric. It's about actually doing it and delivering on promises. And I suspect that it's very similar in China. They've stoked nationalist fervor, and that has placated a lot of people. They are certainly making very overt moves and not ruling out the potential for a military effort. And that's really the easy part. The hard part comes after they've eventually done that. Then they won't be getting the same political support, because holding it will be harder than taking it. So this is a big challenge for China, but a massive bear market in semiconductors could actually help their cause, because China will be a willing buyer and Taiwan would be a desperate seller. And that would obviously be rather beneficial from China's perspective. Now let's also think about the UK, because the pound was up in a dynamic manner in here today, but didn't quite hold all of the move. So Jeremy Hunt over the weekend basically cancelled all of the new spending programs and is talking about raising taxes. And he's also talking about removing the price caps on energy. Now, removing those price caps is going to be an awful lot harder than introducing them in the first place. And they have certainly in the last 10 days granted permission to Centrica to reopen the Rough storage facility in the North Sea. But it was closed down in 2017 and 18 because the cost of renovating it was set at about 700 million and it was considered too expensive. Now, Centrica has got about 4 billion in cash on its balance sheet and about 4 billion in debt. And it's actually got about a market cap of about 4 billion. So we're not talking about an expensive stock here. But they are going to have to spend at least a billion to renovate that storage facility. And we don't have any timeline for when that will in fact happen. And storage, I think there are three moving parts within the LNG sector. There is the export facilities, import facilities, and storage facilities. So storage, if they reopen the Rough facility, will double UK storage. They also need to enhance import facilities. Lots of countries around the world need to build export facilities. Mexico, for example, just signed a deal with Germany to supply them with some natural gas for the next 20 years, but Mexico doesn't have an export facility. So they've got to go out and spend between 4 and 5 billion to build one. And I think it's interesting that Pemex debt is BB rated and trading at about 55 cents on the dollar right now and yields up around 11 and a bit percent. So there is some potential here that Pemex is going to get quite a bit more export income coming through over the next 4 or 5 years. So that should help to support those bonds. I think it's quite interesting that Mexico has also nationalized their lithium sector. So they're certainly making a bet that lithium is going to be a big part of the economy. And I think that's probably a wise decision to bet on lithium, because there's a lot of cars are manufactured in Mexico. And if they're going to take a bigger portion of the revenue from EVs, well, manufacturing batteries in Mexico makes absolute sense. And the Mexican peso has been pretty much pegged to the dollar over the last 2 years. This is despite the fact that the dollar has been storming strong relative to just about every other currency other than the Brazilian real. And the Mexican peso and the Brazilian real represent more than half of the Latin America dollar index, which is still in this lengthy base formation, but not breaking down, and has pretty much not gone anywhere at all over the last couple of years. When we then think about the stock market, investors want to buy. We have deep oversold conditions, We had an upside Q reversal last week, despite the more hawkish tone from CPI. And then the big drop on Friday, a pop on the upside in here today. And we can also think about who are the leaders in this. So it's more of the speculative stocks have rebounded in here today, like Amazon, Tesla, Netflix, Match.com, Zoom, Nvidia. They're all up in excess of 5%. Even Mercado Libre, which is the Latin American version of, or I guess it's an Argentinian company, but the Latin American version of Amazon, is attempting to put in a higher reaction low. But the challenge is that bond yields aren't coming down. We did have a meaningful drawdown in early trading, and now the 10-year yield is pushing back above the 4% level. That's going to contribute to additional volatility. So the kinds of moves that we're seeing right now, where stock markets pulled back aggressively, bounced aggressively, we're certainly seeing interest for buying the dip occur in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. But we are going to have to see some evidence that the dollar is weakening on more than just one day, that the 10-year yields are rolling over. So what we're starting to see now is that yields are rising, but the dollar is falling today. Now, we haven't seen that in a while. So ultimately, the rise in government bond yields is going to raise questions about the funding cost of the debt. Markets have been willing to look past it, but ultimately that's dollar bearish. And until we see some fiscal measures to curtail spending, well, then that's something that would support the dollar, but there's no sign of it, particularly as we head into the midterm elections. So eventually the dollar will roll over. I don't know quite yet whether this is it, but this is looking like a lower rally high, but it wouldn't be the first lower rally high we've seen. So it's at a minimum going to have to break the 110 area in order to confirm that we're back in a supply dominated environment. Gold prices today jumped in early trading and have given up almost all of the move. So gold taking its cue more from bond yields than the dollar in here today. And I do think it's going to require a clear downward trend in the dollar in order to really lend the kind of support to gold that it needs in order to really get the ball moving once more. Silver prices did a better job of holding on to their gains, up 47 cents, and still holding short-term support around the $18 area, but it's got to do better than that. And we're still in a rather difficult environment for the precious metals. Platinum was stronger and still holding this 900 area. There's still the sequence of lower rally highs, and it hasn't quite yet been able to push up through the 200-day moving average. When that happens, we'll be back in a demand-dominated environment. Copper prices. And I do think this is very much more a reflection of what's going on in China than anywhere else, remain subdued. And I think that the risk here is that we surprise on the downside. So we have had a meaningful reversion back up towards the region of the 1,000-day moving average, but it doesn't look like much more than a distribution. Now, oil prices remain in a range, and we still have the sequence of lower rally highs. Until we see a sustained move above 100, then this is still a supply-dominated environment. There's a lot, I think, When I think about the oil sector, there's this incredible debate going on because I continue to see these exceptionally bullish forecasts of people predicting that there's going to be an energy crisis that's going to push prices to $200. And yet prices are going down. There's a rivetingly consistent sequence of lower rally highs. Now, we had this big upward dynamic 2 weeks ago, but it did not manage to push up through the 200-day moving average or the psychological $100 level. And that's the minimum requirement in order to confirm a return to demand dominance. And as we look out at the wider world, there's obviously value being created by the drawdowns that we're seeing. But there's still a lot of money sloshing around. And central banks are still raising rates. And inflationary pressures are still evident. And until all of that it comes back to within norms that can be accepted by central banks, then we're still in a risk-off environment, despite the short-term potential for a rebound, and not least we've had these divergences between the RSI and stock market indices. So we might get some very short-term pops on the upside, but we're still in a bearish market overall. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.